Taking the Ride with Royce. Baby, you're much too fast. On 1500 ESPN.
You know, back when I was a sports writer, there was probably the father of modern-day sport. Well, I would say modern-day sports writing when I was a sports writer, because now sports writing is different again, but was Jim Murray of the Los Angeles Times. And one of the things that he would do is when a Los Angeles team was playing, like in the World Series or the Super Bowl or the NBA Finals, he would write a tongue-in-cheek column belittling the city that the Dodgers were playing.
Okay.
And, of course, the column would get picked up and the town would go. He was trolling. He was trolling the other town. He would belittle the other town. And it was very funny. And it was funny because Jim Murray, I met Jim Murray when I covered the Masters a couple of times. And he was a wonderful guy. And in fact, when I met him, he was basically blind, but he would still go. And one of my favorite stories was the year that Mike Donald, 1990 U.S. Open, Mike Donald got into the playoff with Hale Irwin, and Hale Irwin ended up tying with this monster putt on 18, which you've seen. He runs around the green high-fiving everybody. He made this monster putt. But when Mike Donald was leading after the third round, Mike Donald is in the interview room, and he goes, "I want to ask a question." And Mike Donald was one of my favorite journeymen. He was just a wonderful, very humble guy. You know, I'd won a couple of tournaments on tour. One year led the Masters after the first round and then shot 81 and missed the cut.
Oh, man.
And he goes, "I have one question to ask." He goes, "Mr. Murray." He called him Mr. Murray. Could you tell me why you, because they USA Today would go around and ask all these sports writers who they picked for the U.S. Open.
Okay, sure.
And because Bill Murray was always kind of a contrarian like Royce, he picked Mike Donald. Kind of as a joke, right?
Oh, so his question was, why did you pick me? Yeah.
But he goes, "Mr. Murray, could I ask you one question? Why did you pick me?" And of course, Murray laughed because he realized that, you know, who you pick to win the U.S. Open is silly.
Meaningless, right.
And you know, the U.S. Open kind of is known for these no-names sometimes winning it. So he picked a no-name who he liked. And it wasn't like Mike Donald was a hack. I mean, he had won some tour events and was a solid player, but the guy who's been very good in the majors this year is Hoffman. I can't think of his first name.
But Jordan?
No. His last name is Hoffman. He's 40 years old. He used to have long hair. Charlie Hoffman.
Okay.
He was in the running at the Masters, and he was in the running at the U.S. Open. So Mike Donald was that kind of a guy. He was older, and he could play, but you would be shocked if he won a major. And so he picked him. So this guy today, Dan Bernstein, on CBSChicago.com, sports columnist, writes this. He's talking about Jimmy Butler. He says, "The only thing Jimmy Butler seems to like as much or more than playing basketball is being famous for playing basketball. He has embraced his personal narrative of small-town kid gone Hollywood, even down to actually hanging out in Hollywood part, and he revels in the attention provided by his personal accolades, the Jordan brand he endorses, and plenty of national television exposure." That's all true. Jimmy Butler, when the Wolves traded for him, he was at Fashion Week in Paris with Dwayne Wade. Which still shocks me that when Jimmy Butler flew back from Paris and Thibodeau met him at the airport, that Jimmy Butler was wearing a fanny pack.
And if you saw Dwayne Wade's apparel at the NBA Finals, he needed to go to Fashion
Week. Well, that is fashion. It's so crazy that is fashion, right? So, the guy writes this. He goes, "He makes his offseason home in Los Angeles the better for spending time with movie star pal Mark Wahlberg. His best bud on the Bulls was Dwayne Wade, a fashionable jet setter himself, who set the example for Butler of how a wealthy star looks and behaves." Here we go. "Good luck cutting that same figure in Minneapolis, however. It's a great city. Don't get me wrong. Summers are nice there, even if some of the other months can test one's resolve. It's just really hard to be notable there, no matter one stock and trade. Kevin Garnett transcended the number 15 market for a bit, and other athletes have been able to shine for a time. Props to Kirby Puckett, Adrian Peterson, Fran Tarkin, and Randy Moss, and Joe Mauer, Alan Page. I'm sure I am forgetting some, because that's pretty much the point." He goes, "That this is all to say that Jimmy Butler will need to be a very special player to overcome the smaller, lonelier, colder stage on which he now performs. If the spirit moves him, there's always St. Paul's Fitzgerald Theater nearby, where Garrison Keillor once presided before abdicating his chair to Chris Dial." If that's the right way to pronounce it. "Butler could raise his... Now, this line I don't get. Maybe you guys can explain it to me. Butler could raise his profile by sitting in with Guy's All-Star Shoe Brand. Is that a local brand?
I don't know.
Or lending some harmonies to the hopeful gospel quartet singing, "The Lord Will Make a Way," and wondering how he ended up here. And here's why I bring this up. That, I don't know, my sad thing is because the guy is writing for CBSChicago.com, so I'm profiling him.
You know who this is, though.
Who is it? He's got a radio show.
He used to, he used to be a bigger deal. I think But Pat goes on with him once in a while. That's the only reason why.
So
I know
is he trolling?
Oh, 100%.
So he's
the Ricey of Chicago.
Okay,
well yeah, that's what he's doing.
But the thing that I get a kick out of is that people in Minnesota get riled up over this stuff.
Of course we do.
And I guess I don't understand that. I mean, look, Jimmy.
But here's the thing, and I don't mean to cut you off, so I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But I personally don't get wound up because you know what I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to get the reaction.
He's doing what Jim Murray did.
Exactly. He's trying to get, 100 guys in Minneapolis to retweet this and that way, and thus getting all of the web clicks and whatnot. And he knows that that's good for business. But what he's also doing, in my opinion, when I read that, is he's the girlfriend that just got dumped. He's the girlfriend that just got dumped and pointing out the new girl's flaws is what he's doing right here.
Which is really sad, to be honest. It was funny because during GL, Seuss said to me, or during Sports Talk, Seuss said to me, Jimmy Butler has no baggage. I said, well, no, he does have baggage. His baggage is he basically stopped following Fred Hoiberg.
Right.
And so the Bulls had a choice, and I think they made the wrong one. If I was the Bulls, I would have canned Fred Hoiberg, and I would have kept Jimmy Butler. Because the reason Jimmy Butler was upset with Fred Hoiberg is because he was a country club coach. And Jimmy Butler is a hard-nosed player. And Jimmy Butler was the 30th pick in the draft.
Yep.
He didn't hardly play his first year.
His tail off to become the player he is today.
The first year that, he had to play junior college, not because he couldn't qualify to play Division I basketball, academically, but because he didn't have any good scholarship offers. Then he went to Marquette. And Jimmy Butler's a guy who then played very well at Marquette, but he was the last pick in the first round, which doesn't mean he's the dregs. He's not Isaiah Thomas, who was the last pick in the second round. But, you see Isaiah Thomas, and Isaiah Thomas is little, and, there was a joke this week about Isaiah Thomas. Someone gave him a vote on the All-Star team and all-defensive team. And so when Isaiah Thomas, missed those games, the Celtics actually played much better defense because Isaiah Thomas it's hard to be a good defensive player when you're 5'9", let's face it, okay? Yeah. But Isaiah Thomas plays with an incredible chip on his shoulder, right? That's why he's so good. And way better than anyone thought. And Jimmy Butler plays with an incredible chip on his shoulder that is natural to him, that fits with Tibbs, right?
Yep.
And so when Fred Hoiberg comes in and is running like a country club, Jimmy Butler lost all respect for him. And Jimmy Butler let it be known. So is that baggage? It's a fact. I think it is. I think you should respect your coach, but it was clear he did not respect. And I'm guessing that's the reason. And he didn't respect the GM either, Gar Forman. And I think that's why they had, because why do you trade a guy who's a top 15, maybe top 10 player in the NBA?
And then your trainer tweets out something throwing shots at
Gar Forman.
Basically said
Gar Forman has no integrity, is a moralistically depraved person and all that stuff. But the fact of the matter is, Jimmy Butler's got the 40th highest paid salary in the NBA, and he's a top 15 player. That's the very definition of value. He's under contract for two more years. So why do you trade a guy like that? I would say Ricky fits in the same way. If you ranked Ricky as a player and then looked at where his salary puts him, Ricky's a value player. Ricky is a higher ranked player than he is paid. That's value. If you're the 10th best player and you paid like the 20th, that's value.
So I would be a value producer.
You would be a value producer. maybe more for the salary than the value.
But, right.
But you know what you're saying. I'm a value talk show host. If I could just get through 2 hours, right. I'm a value talk show host where they pay me. But so my point with Jimmy Butler is that he does have baggage, but he's coming to Minnesota. I don't know whether he's happy to be here or not. He seems to be. But if he and Towns mesh and Tibbs and him mesh, this is going to be better for his career because he was going nowhere in Chicago, right? Isn't that true?
I think so, and I mean, Manny obviously has better opinions on this than I do. But I at first blush when we heard about this, I thought that they were losing also the first round pick. But then when you heard that they were just swapping picks, so they could get another player, and oh by the way, they can still add pieces in free agency. I don't know how you look at this as a bad move.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, because there's 2 years left for Butler. If he legitimately does not like being in Minnesota, which is a smaller city, I like the size of this city. I like Chicago, but this is a good sized city for me. But I could see where Jimmy Butler. But you know, it's not like he can't live in L.A.
In the off season.
He can still go to Fashion Week if he wants. It's
sure.
in the off season.
We have an airport.
Exactly right.
Kevin Garnett had a house in Los Angeles on Malibu or something while he was playing for the Celtics.
And as we all know, LeBron has a house in Malibu as well, or somewhere in L.A. Because it was, of course, desecrated. We'll take a break. Kenny with traffic.
Hitching a ride with Royce.
When's he going to pack it in?
I don't know.
On 1500 ESPN.
Buster Olney is with us, ESPN and ESPN.com. Buster, we're just a couple of days away from the final voting of the All-Star Game. I'm wondering to get your thoughts on who you think should potentially be on the American League roster, sir.
Yeah, I turned in my list, ESPN.com. If you were to pick an all-star team using the rules in place, and I've got two twins on the team. I've got Ervin Santana, who's obviously had a terrific season, one of the best starting pitchers, and Miguel Sano. And I think, Jose Berríos has a really interesting case, and that he clearly, since he's come back to the big leagues, has been among the best starting pitchers. I just don't think he's gotten enough of a track record, this year, enough volume yet. But I will be interested to see is inevitably guys drop off because of injury, if he might be a guy who's going to get out of the team because he's been that good. But Sano, with all the power, the incredible rate of hard hit balls, the best in the big leagues, he would be on there. Santana, we've seen some regression and stuff. And the other day, his start against the Indians was like rope-a-dope. But he's been pretty dang good. And so I've got both those guys.
I'm glad you brought up Berríos, because the thing that I found encouraging, at least personally, last night was, the first inning against the Red Sox, he looked a little shaky. He kind of looked like the Jose Berríos of last year. But then he settled down, and he dominated that lineup for a couple of innings. And I think that's really encouraging for Twins fans.
And to your point, I thought last year you'd watch him pitch, and this is not unusual for young pitchers, where it felt like that he had a hard time reversing the momentum, like he couldn't stop the snowball from going downhill. And this year, clearly, he's done that. So different a pitcher. And by the end of the year, I think we're going to be talking about him as being one of the maybe 5-8 best starting pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think he tends to, when he gets in a tough spot, I think he tries to overthrow a little bit too much instead of relying on, some of that off-speed stuff where he can really fool batters at times.
Well, and I think as we sit here today and you try to, gauge the Twins' chances for, hanging on and winning the American League Central, to me, he would be reason number one. Like, if you were to, to handicap the team, that to me is the one part of the team that's a giant X factor. What is he going to bring in the second half of the season?
Buster Olney, ESPN and ESPN.com, on the ride with Royce Reaver, sitting in for Patrick here today. Pat and I had this conversation towards the beginning of the year, Buster, about the overall health of baseball and how many young rising stars this game continues to put out. And this year has been no exception. You've got Bellinger in LA. You've got Aaron Judge with the Yankees. I think the health of baseball is as good as it's been.
Yes, I would agree with you in terms of if you were baseball and you're trying to come up with a group of players that you want to market, it's never, in my opinion, been in a better place because there's someone for everybody. Whether you like power hitters, whether you like a speed guy, whether you like a great all-around player like Mike Trout. And, the two guys that you mentioned, Aaron Judge, literally having perhaps the greatest season we've ever seen from a rookie player. Baseball Reference has a great stat called Adjusted OPS Plus, which allows you to compare players of different eras, within the context of their times. The number one player on Adjusted OPS Plus all-time rookie was Shoeless Joe Jackson in 1911, scored a 193. Mike Trout's rookie season, 2012, he scored like a 168, so far below that. Aaron Judge is just one tick behind Shoeless Joe at 192. So that's how good he's been. And we've seen the adjustment from the rest of the league over the course of June. He's already got 22 walks in the month of June. The last rookie to draw 100 walks in a season was Junior Gilliam in 1953. the record for walks by in the modern era by any hitter, Ted Williams with 107. It looks like Aaron Judge is going to blow past 100 walks and probably break Ted Williams' record.
That's incredible when you think about it. And I know you were one of the guys heading into the season that you were pretty high on the Yankees, and most baseball fans thought that this was going to be somewhat of a transition year for them by going young and playing some of these kids that they acquired via draft and development and trades. And now they're going to be in a position where they're going to have to be buyers at the deadline and try to win the division.
Yeah, and I don't think they'll necessarily go absolutely nutty with it, you're going to see them trading a bunch of prospects to try to prop up their chances in 2017. I think you'll see them be opportunity buyers, especially with position players. And in recent days, they lost Aaron Hicks, who has been such an important part of what they've done this year. They lost Matt Holliday. Last couple of days, he had some response to an allergic reaction that's been an issue for him. Starlin Castro just went on the disabled list. What you hear from general managers is they feel like that there's so few buyers for position players that by the time we get to the last week of July, you're going to see teams desperately trying to dump salaries with position players because there's just not that many buyers. The Dodgers, the Rockies, the Diamondbacks, the Astros, the Nationals, those are all contenders who are not looking for position players. And on the other hand, the Tigers have talked about opening up for business with a guy like J.D. Martinez. The Mets have gone out in the marketplace and told people, look, Jay Bruce, Curtis Granderson. So the Yankees and other teams may have some opportunities as buyers if they're willing to take on salary.
Speaking of the trading deadline, I think you nailed it with the Houston. I think, I don't know what the national perspective is, but in my estimation, Houston is clearly the best team in the American League, and I think Boston is a bit behind them, but they're still very, very good. So you wonder how active a lot of the teams in the American League will be, knowing just how good Houston has been this year.
I think they'll be extremely active with pitching, and I agree with you. I think Houston is the class of the American League, and I think they will. Their big lead in the American League West affords them the opportunity to wait. And a guy to watch with the Twins, with the Astros in particular, is Gerrit Cole, the Pirates. Because the Pirates are still in contention in the National League Central, but the way they run their team is that if someone has a good offer for them, they will listen. And some of the other starting pitchers who you can control beyond just 2017 haven't been great. Sonny Gray hasn't pitched great. Jose Quintana, the White Sox, has had a down year. Gerrit Cole, in his last two starts, has looked tremendous. And he's not a free agent until after the 2019 season. So what you might see, I think, is Houston calling the Pirates, loading up on a deal, and giving them a last piece I think they need to really be a team that can win the World Series.
An entering play yesterday, the Twins did have a half-game lead on Cleveland. After that three-game sweep over the Tribe over the weekend, and I'm wondering, what are you hearing nationally as far as what the Twins' plans are heading into the trade deadline at the end of July?
I think their play has really altered the perspective of the front office. What I'm hearing from rival executives is the Twins probably are not going to sell unless you see a complete collapse in the month of July. They're close enough now, and the Indians have demonstrated they're flawed enough. The division is winnable. And so, whereas at the beginning of the year, if they had an opportunity to sell Ervin Santana, they probably would have taken it. Now, I don't think the potential return for a guy like Santana is necessarily going to nudge them into a deal. They probably will be more likely to wait until the winter time. If Santana has a good year, are you going to be able to trade him this winter, especially because the control involved in his contract? If you trade him in the middle of the season, you probably get a couple of B-plus type prospects. That's not enough of a return for the Twins front office, from what I hear, to wave the white flag and pass on the opportunity to contend this year.
And the front office will find out a lot about this club too when they finish up these four games in Boston, and then they play four more in Kansas City over the weekend before the 4th of July.
And the Royals right now are an interesting case. I've heard from folks within baseball that they, at the beginning of the year, the Royals certainly were of the mind of, if we're not doing well, then we'll trade this core of guys that we've had, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Lorenzo Cain, to start us on the rebuilding path. But they've surged back into contention again. And it feels like this whole group of players is like a senior class that's getting getting ready to graduate, and they put themselves in position to compete again. And you have Dayton Moore, the general manager, who's very loyal to his players. He understands we don't know when the Royals are going to contend again, and he's not going to undercut them this one last opportunity to finish up their time and graduate in Kansas City.
Buster Olney, ESPN and ESPN.com, is with us here on The Ride with Royce. It's Chris Reavers, and you mentioned Cody Bellinger a little bit earlier, and I want to ask you, have you seen a guy that's just splashed onto the scene the way that this kid has for the Dodgers? And I've got I said this to Pat a couple of days ago. That is the prettiest left-handed swing that I've seen since a young Ken Griffey Jr.
It's incredible. And I, you know, back in the day, I covered his father with the Yankees. I just couldn't imagine that he would be this good this quickly. I'd heard about Cody Bellinger for years, an underrated part of what he does. He's a terrific first baseman. But to hit the ball that hard, that consistently, is amazing. I mentioned, you know, Miguel Sano, highest hard hit ball rate in the American League. Cody Bellinger is the hardest rate of hard hit balls in the National League. 50% of the time when he puts the ball in play, he's someone who can do a whole lot of damage. And the thing that jumps out at you is the incredible confidence that he has. Like, he reminds me of Mike Trout in that regard. You can just tell. He's sitting there saying, you know what? I'm going to get you. The one adjustment I'm really curious to see if he makes, the one that Aaron Judge has made, in the willingness to take walks. He's got only a .340 on base percentage. You got to believe opposing pitching coaches, catchers, pitchers will say, you know what? We're going to spin some breaking stuff out of the strike zone. We'll see if he chases. And given how hot he is, you figure that opposing teams will start to look to make that adjustment immediately.
And you know the thing, I've only watched him a handful of times, but the one thing that's impressed me is his approach and his execution against left-handed pitching. He came up and he hit a ball off of Miller for the Tribe a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, this is a 21-year-old kid that's doing this against a guy that almost won the World Series for Cleveland last year? That was impressive.
And the next inning, that very next inning after he got one off Andrew Miller, he got one off Boone Logan.
Right.
So in the same game, he nails two matchup left-handers, and you're right. And I bet you surprised the Dodgers as well, because no team plays platoons more than the Dodgers do. And I bet you when he was promoted to the big leagues, the Dodgers thinking was, well, you know what, young guy, will work him in. He's got some power. He's created playing time for himself by being so good against left-handed pitching.
And, you know, that race is going to be, I think, the most interesting in baseball, that National League West, because all three of those teams are good.
They're terrific. I do think, you know, we talked about the Astros being the best team in the American League. The Dodgers, to me, are the class of the National League right now. You know, as we get closer to the trade deadline, they're probably going to be opportunity buyers. You know, anything falls in their lap, they'll jump at it. I'm curious to see if the Rockies augment their pitching before the deadline, because I mean, we've seen through the years that's their great challenge. Do they have enough pitching depth to continue to contend through the course of a long season? And a lot of scouts I speak with are asking the question. They have these really good young starters. Can those guys hold up when we get to August and September?
One final thing, Buster. We have a gentleman's bet between a few of us diehard baseball fans here off the air. Are the Mets, do they have the gall, do they have the you-know-what to bring up Tim Tebow in September?
Wow, that is a great question. My guess is no, that they won't do it. I just think they understand that this would be like their version of when the St. Louis Browns played Eddie Goodell, right?
Right.
Who was the small person who was, what, 5 foot tall or 4 foot 11 or something like that. They put him into one game and he drew a four-pitch walk. It would kind of be similar because Tim Tebow is not close to being a major leaguer. And if they did it, boy, they would engender a whole lot of criticism. And on the other hand, they'd also have a lot of people buying tickets, which is why they're keeping him in the minor leagues.
Yeah, that's and jerseys, too, and everything else that goes along with it.
And I said, look, I have no problem with Tim Tebow playing in the minor leagues. If he wants to pursue this, the idea he's taking a job from somebody, that's a joke. But let's also not pretend that he's anything close to a big leaguer. It would be like putting the San Diego Chicken in your lineup.
Fantastic. Buster, happy 4th of July. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me, Chris.
You got it. Buster Olney, ESPN and ESPN.com, is with us on The Ride with Royce. We'll be back right after this.
All right, time to head into the 1500 ESPN newsroom with Johnny Hite.
Thank you, Corzo. This update sponsored by Verizon. Get answers before you have questions with vehicle diagnostics and more. Hum by Verizon is the technology that connects you to your car. Learn more at hum.com. Twins Red Sox at Fenway Park again tonight. Adalberto Mejia and Rick Porcello on the mound. Your lineup, Dozier, Grossman, Mauer, Sano, Kepler, Vargas, Rosario, Polanco, and Castro. Twins today bringing Phil Hughes back from the DL. Craig Breslow put on the DL with what's being called left thoracic rib cage soreness. St. Paul Saints are at home tonight. They're playing the Sioux City Explorers at CHS Field. A lot of NBA news today. The Knicks, of course, and team president Phil Jackson announced that they've mutually agreed to part ways. Knicks owner James Dolan saying via statement, after careful thought and consideration, we mutually agreed the Knicks will be going in a different direction. I have to point out, as North Dakotan, of course, that he was a star athlete in North Dakota, Mr. Jackson.
Roger Maris, who was born in Hibbing.
No.
He's so easy.
Phil Jackson was born in Montana, see, so he wasn't a native North Dakotan either. As I said, athlete, not born there.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they say mutually agreed, Dolan said, I don't want you to work here anymore. And Phil said, are you going to give me the rest of my check? And he said, yes. He said, okay, I mutually agree then.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep. A big NBA trade today. The Clippers trading Chris Paul to the Rockets. Paul's contract was up, of course. He could have gone to the Rockets as a free agent. The Clippers working out a deal so they could get something in return for him. The deal will enable Paul to make more money than he would have if he had left as a free agent. Clippers will get Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Sam Decker, and a 2018 first-round pick. Should also open up some cap space for the Clippers in the near future.
Even more importantly, Johnny, that means because he opted in, he's not a free agent till next year. Now, maybe he'll sign in the offseason, but that means next year.
He can still get the Supermax, too.
Right. And next year, though, CP3, which I know Royce hates, so I'll say it, CP3, LeBron, D-Wade, and Carmelo will all be presently, unless they all sign an extension, they could have four guys. They should go to the Nets.
Go to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And play with D'Angelo Russell.
Go to the Nets.
Are you more of a CP3 or an RG3 kind of a guy?
Oh, I'm CP3.
Okay. Yeah. Is RG3 even on a team?
Did the Browns cut him?
Browns got rid of him, yeah. Right? Yeah. I think.
Did you hear about the drama about Chris Paul, too, and Doc Rivers? That apparently Chris Paul was upset with Doc Rivers because they had a chance last year to trade for Carmelo Anthony, and Doc Rivers didn't want to trade his kid. He didn't want to trade Austin in the deal. And CP3 was not happy about
that. How do you suppose DeAndre Jordan feels now? Where he was going to go, what team was he going to go to? Was it the
Dallas?
Dallas. Yeah. And now they all said, oh, come with us here. Now he's the last guy stuck. It was like when I was in college, all my buddies said, oh, we're going an extra semester. And then in spring semester, I said, where are we living next spring? They said, we're all graduating.
Right.
They left me behind. Exactly.
Yep. One other basketball note. Now, I didn't know. Apparently I said it on the air, but I didn't remember. These guys told me. There's a league called the Big Three. It's a 3-on-3 league.
Yes.
And I was very sad because one of my former favorite players, Jason Williams, will miss 6 to 8 months because he suffered a knee injury in the opening game of the Big Three.
Can I ask, we had this discussion today at lunch. There's three Jason Williams.
This is white chocolate.
Well, that's what I said, because there's white chocolate. There's the guy who killed limo driver.
I think
he's out.
I think he's out.
So there's Jason Williams, white chocolate. There's the guy who killed the limo driver. And then there's the guy in ESPN who played
Jay Williams.
Who blew out his knee on a motorcycle accident.
Correct. So this was white chocolate.
This was white chocolate.
It's like in the first half, you're going to see these guys dropping left and right.
And it was the Jay Williams, the Duke kid, who mentioned that Phil Jackson was falling asleep. A prospect told him that Phil Jackson was falling asleep during his workout. So,
and Jay Williams is actually pretty good on ESPN.
Yeah, he's very good. Yeah. I like him,
There's not a lot of scoring in this league, apparently. It's 3-on-3, I suppose. But the final of this game was 62-60. So the three-headed monsters beat the ghost ballers.
All right.
There are a lot of ex-NBA players, in the league.
Corey McGetty got hurt, too.
He did, injured in the opening week, had surgery for a leg injury.
They're going to have a Bengay sponsorship.
It's got to be brutal.
Games actually are played only to 50 points instead of 60, by the way, with halftime coming when the first team reaches 25. So that's the way the league
That's how a pickup game is done. You know, when you do a half-court game, you play to a number, you don't play it to the clock. Yeah, I like it.
And former Redskins running back Clinton Portis contemplated killing one of his former financial managers after he lost millions of dollars in investments. In a story published by Sports Illustrated, Portis recounted a night 4 years ago where he sat in a car outside a building holding a gun and waiting for one of the managers he felt had ruined him financially. Portis had made $43.1 million in his nine-year NFL career, but most of it had either been spent or lost through investments, or as one lawsuit asserted, bank withdrawals without his consent. An anonymous friend A television producer who had been trained as a family therapist talked him out of committing murder, but Porter said he went there, sitting in his car late at night outside the building with just one purpose. He told the publication if he had seen the person before settling down, quote, we'd probably be doing this interview from prison.
Wow. Thanks, Johnny.
Yep.
Hitching a ride with Royce.
Okay, that sounds unnecessarily dangerous.
Yes, it does.
The Ride with Royce on 1500 ESPN.
You know, I'll give you a little inside radio here. You know, I listen a lot to CNN and to Fox because I got to switch back and forth on my XM radio.
Because they report, you decide.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there was a story that came out where some Fox producer or no, some CNN producer said, you know, that they were told by the muckety mucks that they have to just keep talking about the Russia all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't surprise me.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I'm a lib, but I'm not a blind. I think that the conservatives are blind because they think Fox is legit. Okay. I'm a lib and I know CNN ain't legit. Okay. Neither is Fox. There's nobody that's legit anymore. Everybody
has an agenda.
They have an agenda because they're trying to attract that group of people. And the mm-hmm. only people that are idiots are the people that think the one that they agree with is legit. You open your eyes, people. You know, Fox is pushing one agenda. CNN's pushing another. MSNBC's even way out there. That's the way it is. But if I can come up with an idea, if I can come up with something that's tied into sports talk about Donald Trump, I'm going to do it. And first of all, last week when the picture came out about Donald Trump driving his golf cart on the green. Did you see this?
No.
You didn't see this? Neither of you guys, aren't you? You guys Twitter heads? How could you miss it?
So can I be real with you for a second?
Yeah.
I try to avoid it as much as I
possibly. Twitter?
No. But stuff like that. And anything that's not important to what I have to do for, especially for garage logic, I just avoid it.
And I'll be fully honest with you, I don't follow the current president of the United States.
No, I don't
Twitter.
Either. This was tweeted by, you know, Golf Digest, sure. by Time Magazine, by all
but
these news sites.
I know what you're getting at,
though. So Donald Trump apparently had a bad hole. And so his cart is parked right next to the green. I'm talking not a pull cart. I'm talking about like the cart you sit in and drive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you don't have to be a golfer to know that you don't drive the cart on the green. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So and you don't even drive it close. All these nice courses, and he's playing one of his courses, which are all nice, is expensive high resort courses. They have like cart paths. When you get near the green, they'll have a little sign and you can't get it near the green and you park it on the cart path and that cart path will take you to the next. So somebody is bringing him something. So his cart is already not parked on the cart path. It's parked like right next to the green. So he's already committed a faux pas. And he's in the cart, and he takes it and pulls it right into the middle of the green. The guy hands him something, and he drives off through the green. And when asked about it later, he says, well, I own the course. And I got to thinking, just because you own the course, it just shows a lack of respect for the course. Yes, you own it. And I suppose if you wanted to sit there and, like, do a wheelie in the middle of the green and rip it up, you could do it. But you own a course that you have guests that are using it, right? The people that are staying at the resort.
You'd like to maintain
the level
of play.
Yes, you don't ruin your own. It's like if I have a store and want to go in and knock down all the shelves, I suppose I could do it and it wouldn't be a crime. But that's really not what you do if you have a business. To me, it just tells you about Trump's, that the rules don't apply to Donald Trump. And
He cheats in golf anyway, doesn't he?
Oh, he absolutely does. He takes 8-footers for... But there's another story that came out on Trump this week that Time Magazine, have you heard this one? Donald Trump has been a big name in golf world for a long time, but now that he's the sitting president, his image is emblazoned on magazine covers around the world. But one such cover on display at multiple Trump golf clubs is fake. David A. Farenthold of the Washington Post reported the news on Tuesday. The fake cover shows a posing Trump with the headlines under, it's a Time cover, The Apprentice is a television smash, and Trump is hitting on all fronts, even on TV. The cover purports to be from the March 1, 2009 issue of Time, but as Farenthold notes, quote, there was no March 1, 2009 issue of Time magazine, and there was no issue at all in 2009 that Trump had on the cover. Carrie Chaika, a spokeswoman for Time, which is owned by the same parent company as Golf.com, told the Washington Post, I can confirm that this is not a real-time cover. The magazine has requested the Trump Organization remove the fake cover from its properties. So he's got this Time magazine. Now here's Donald Trump, who has been on the cover of Time magazine, I'm sure, many times.
Especially during the election.
And has been on the cover of many magazines over his career. Couldn't he, and a lot of people that are on the cover of magazines might have copies of those covers in their offices, or they might have a copy of them posing with famous people, right? We've seen people that do that. You know, he has a whole bunch of covers, and I'm sure some of them were complimentary, right? That he could put on his wall, yet he chooses a fake one talking about The Apprentice. It just kind of tells you all you need to know about the guy, that he drives a cart on his own putting green. And I'm not saying he's breaking any law. I'm not even saying that Time has the legal right. I don't think that he's breaking any laws. It just tells you that everything about the guy is he can't even tell the truth when he easily could tell the truth.
Yeah, but the one funny thing in regards to the Time magazine cover was that's when Twitter was at its best, because then you got all the fake, well, here's another fake Time magazine cover, and like it's a kid's stick figure drawing, you know, things like that are clearly
Kenny
made
just
up.
Came in here and said I should get off of Twitter. I love Twitter.
I do too.
I find it to be entertaining, and I also learn a lot of news.
And you can pick and choose what you want to. I agree. Yeah.
And I don't get upset by. Of course, there's Nimrods on there. It doesn't bother me. I mean, I guess I just have a thicker skin. We'll take a break and come back with. I don't even know. It was my daily complaint. Well, I could come up with another one.
You're on the ride with Royce.
This has always been my problem. I always take the one-liner and don't worry about the consequences. I should have worried more about consequences. No!
The Ride with Royce.
That's what because makes you you.
Yeah.
On 1500 ESPN. We're not gonna take it. Now, on the Ride with Royce, let's hear the boys' daily complaints.
All right, Manny, you got a daily complaint?
Yeah, I got one. My daily complaint is people that drive when it's raining. They drive like there's 6 or 7 feet of snow on the ground. It's like, people, it's rain. And I understand people want to be careful and they don't want to be crazy or anything like that, but you can go faster than 40 on the freeway.
I just like it when people don't turn their lights on.
Well, yeah, there's that, and then people don't use their turn signals when they're changing lanes, and
all modern cars don't the headlights come on when you start them?
Some do, but some have some don't have the automatic sensor that kicks in. But that's a problem.
I mean, mine are always on,
but mine too.
And then they go off when I shut it off. I don't even have to think about it.
Right,
it's kind of
nice. Is a good thing. How about you, Reavers?
I have a 2-word daily complaint. Matt Belisle. Stop! I'm done. I'm done, and I'm serious. He might be the world's greatest guy. That's fine. Stop. Stop with this already. DFA this guy. If you want to bring him in a game you're already losing 9-2 to pitch a couple of innings, fine. But quit bringing him in situations when the game matters.
Well, I'll give you my daily complaint is kind of against people that are complaining about the weaknesses of the Twins. We knew they won 59 games last year. They're going to probably win 75 this year. And it's a miracle. But I will say this on Matt Belisle. So I was going to do a segment on the Twins. You know how many starting pitchers the Twins have used this year?
I know it's been 26 pitchers total.
9 starting pitchers, including starts by Nick Turley, Nick Tepish, and Adam Wilk. And of the Twins relievers, to your point, the reliever with the most appearances is Taylor Rogers, 34. He's been solid.
Yeah.
Brandon Kinsler does well for what he's got, right? He's at least a major. He's one of the 5 guys.
He is on a major league roster on a team that matters.
But the guy who has tied with Brandon Kinsler for the second most relief appearances on the Twins this year is none other than your favorite, Matt Belisle, followed by Tyler Duffy, who's been good, and then Craig Breslow. And they've had guys pitch that Adam Wilk has been a reliever as well. Randy Rosario, who they're high on, but is little, but is young and not ready. Alex Wimmer, some other guys. And, of course, Chris Jimenez.
The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different
result.
But
you got to pitch somebody.
Not Matt Belisle. That's fine.
The Great Outdoors following it. Listen in, Jess Myers and Dennis Anderson here on 1500 ESPN. Thanks for having me. You will try to slip
away somehow. Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.